Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, in the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Grimshaw.
I'm Kat Napsok, happy to be here answering those cues.
That is right. This is one of our questions of the Everything episodes. And this week, everything is Qui-Gon Jinn in MTV Unplugged. The entire history of civilization in those two topics, right? We should say, as always, that we are, not as always, it's special. That's why we're saying it. Yeah. We are pre-recording. I am out of town this weekend as we record at the end of 1 week, and then we'll be releasing this episode on our normal Tuesday. So, you know, if the second season of Boba Fett and Kenobi are combined into one season and have been announced, if Boba Kenobi has been announced, then we don't know about it because we're from the past.
That's amazing. I think it's a Paul Simon lyric, right? Boba Kenobi, roll out of bed. Yeah.
There's some food somewhere called a Boba Kenobi.
A Boba Kenobi.
I invented a Boba Kenobi. Like, what? You want me to eat your fan fiction? Okay.
Right. I love that. I challenge our friend Dad at the Food in My Beard to create a Boba Kenobi.
I don't even know what kind of food it is, but I'll give it a try. Speaking of trying things, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend Dark Disciple by Christy Golden, some essential Asajj Ventress storytelling while we wait with our fingers steepled for more Asajj Ventress. If you want to download your free audiobook today, you can go to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audio book. We also have an ask, right, Ken?
We do. We are asking for you to consider checking out our Patreon page at patreon.com/4center. We have a goal, a quest still ongoing right now. We got close. The way Patreon works, you get close, then you two steps back, and then it's just the life of us right now. But if we reach 400 paid supporters, we are going to unlock a new commentary of a Star Wars film. And it could be one we've done before, because we're going to put it to you patrons to help us decide. Is it Phantom Menace? We got the 25th anniversary of May. Is it Last Jedi? We've done that. We can take a look at anything, but the vote will be done in Patreon. And you can help us reach that goal if you become a paid supporter. And remember, on patreon.com/4center, also things there, exclusive access to the 007 Center episode on Casino Royale. And then we have Quantum of Solace coming later, early April. You know, it's scheduling is a thing in life, but we're going to get to it. We're excited about that one. That's actually the one that kind of launched the idea for you and I to talk about Quantum of Solace, all exclusive there. It's also on our shop page if you're not a paid member. Get in there and check out Patreon.com/4center if you want.
Yeah, I had so much fun. I already watched Quantum of Solace, and then we had to bump it because we had the pleasure of talking about Acolyte instead. So soon we will get to the Quantum of Solace. First, we needed to enjoy the Quantum of Acolyte. Ken, do you want to talk life or Star Wars adventures, the adventures you've had so far, or should we make up adventures we're going to have had by Tuesday?
Yeah. The way my life works sometimes, I can even predict my adventures. I've just become that predictable in life. Of just, here's what my weekend will be. But no, you know, here's a quickly discuss just the absolute fun and hype of the Acolyte trailer and the discussion around it. As always, there's going to be detractors and haters and all those. Sure, whatever. I don't feel the need to engage with it right now. I just had a lot of fun taking in the trailer and then doing something I haven't done in a while, which is doing kind of a YouTube tour of not just channels that I know and you know and we've been on or we're friends with, you know, Holy Snokes at PLD Project, Star Wars Explained, the guys at Scoundrels Inc. I was just watching a lot of reaction videos, and I don't love reaction content, I will say, but I got caught up in it too, and that's part of the value of reaction videos. I get that. But it was just kind of fun to have an actual Star Wars hype adventure this past week.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. And you know, on the live stream, we talked a little bit about some of the negative reaction that's going to be there. Mm-hmm. There's things, there's change that people don't like. And there's been some negativity around the action figures, sadly. But there's announcements of Acolyte action figures. I'm going to focus on the joy because we talked about it. We'll talk about it again, some of the negativity, and you can check out the live stream. But to stay on the positive, oh, man, I love it when the action figures, if they can't come out for the show, that they're at least announced for the show. Because one of the things that thrilled me about that Acolyte trailer is just really connecting back to all those years in my life where I'd be like, the height of the Jedi. It wasn't just Luke and and Obi-Wan who, you know, never even ignited their lightsabers at the same time. And, you know, seeing that lineup of Jedi and you don't know who they are, but you know they got their own thing, but they're also a Jedi and they look cool. And, you know, the action, if I had turned a corner in a Target in just like 1987 before the Power of the Force and there was just a new Jedi and I didn't know who the hell that character was, that would almost been a bonus. It'd be like, great. A fun mystery, you know, a present to be unwrapped. So I'm excited for the new Jedi characters. I'm excited for the show, and I'm excited to buy them in plastic form.
I thought they looked really good, and you know, my collecting days aren't done. some things can pull me back. And there's some figures. I was like, I don't know. I haven't seen the show, but that might need to be on my shelf somewhere. Yeah. One of the, you just made me think, unrelated but completely related. You, Luke, Obi-Wan, Han holding Luke's blade, Vader. Yeah, we didn't grow up with like three lightsabers on the screen at once. We did not at all. And the appeal of the prequels being around that Attack of the Clones trailer shot of all of them encircling lightsabers, that and even just Anakin and Obi-Wan fighting Dooku at the same time, three blades on display. You're right. That spoke to something primal inside me that I needed to see.
It was. And like, I can't always be motivated by my sort of genre nerd depression era attitude.
Yes.
Not to make fun of anybody who went through difficult times, but you know, we all know people who have like, yeah, no, I didn't always have access to money, so I save every penny kind of thing. And sometimes I feel that way about pop culture. You know, remember when we didn't have eight Jedi we didn't know igniting lightsabers at the same time?
You'd imagine it.
I'm gonna collect that. I'm gonna put that in a tin and keep it.
I agree with you. Well done. Good stuff.
That wasn't any of my life adventures. That's just Acolyte, I guess. I guess it really is my life adventures of sitting here trying to get work done while scrolling through action figure websites.
Okay. Yep, indeed.
All right. Speaking of getting work done, we're going to dive into these questions and spend some time with a Jedi we know and love, Qui-Gon Jinn. This comes to us from patron James Pasqualucci. James says, hello there, Joseph, Ken, and Jennifer. I will pause in the question to acknowledge that Jennifer isn't here. Jennifer's got a busy week of life adventures, so she's been having to step away, which is just, you know, we want Jennifer here always, but the way that we make it work is also understanding if it's a week she can't join us. So we all want Jennifer to be here, and she'll be back next week. Continuing. James says, today, I was hoping to hear your thoughts on a moment with Qui-Gon that has always intrigued me. When eating dinner at Anakin's house, Anakin reveals his understanding that Qui-Gon is a Jedi Knight. When trying to deny it, saying he may have killed a Jedi and taken his lightsaber from him, Anakin responds by saying that no one can kill a Jedi. It is in this flash of a second that fascinates me. Qui-Gon gives a young and hopeful boy a simple smile, but then solemnly says that he wishes that were so. That is my personal reading of the scene, says James. I've always wondered what was the source of how Qui-Gon responded. Do you think he is thinking back to the tragedy of Rael Avros's student or some other incident that impacted him greatly as a Padawan that we do not yet know? Or is he thinking of the Jedi as a whole, with Anakin's belief representing the total mythical and idealistic side of the Jedi that Qui-Gon has realized they're not currently living up to? Am I just thinking way too much about this scene like any good Star Wars fan would? Can't wait to see what you all have to say. Hope life is going well for you all. Thank you again for the amazing discussions, and may the force be with you. May the force be with you, James. Based on the number of notes I wrote down, I don't think you're overthinking it, James. Or if you are, you're certainly not alone. Ken, I want to just start with that beat. Back in 1999, even when I had more qualms and grumbles about the prequels than I do now, I liked that beat. I liked that beat a lot. Did you always gravitate toward that moment? Did you always enjoy it?
I did. I really did. And yeah, same thing. There's some things at that dinner table scene that, you know, would spawn a lot of bar conversations about how bad this was and it's for kiddies and, you know, talk about Jar Jar and his tongue. Now, I like that beat too as well. But
I like that too.
I think I'm picking up what you're putting down, James, as they might say in the youth. There's a lot there. And what I also think this is celebrating, and I'll, you know, we'll dive in deeper here, obviously, is the now of it all, where you're talking about Rael Avros. That wasn't in our minds, obviously, 1999. There's so many ways you can take this and so many ways you can read it. And it speaks to Liam Neeson and his success with the role as well.
Yeah, it's such a great always in motion is the force kind of idea, because I actually pulled this question and put together this rundown the day before the Acolyte trailer dropped, and we learned that the central mystery of the Acolyte is somebody's killing Jedi.
Right.
So, you know, it becomes, you know, hey, Qui-Gon could be thinking about back 100 years ago when there was a Jedi serial killer. Like, yeah, they really can die. It's a problem. Yeah, I think I've always loved it because I think it's just such a character moment. It's such a great sort of a show don't tell character moment for Qui-Gon of showing that a real still waters run deep, that he's got a lot on his mind and he's lived a life and it's really wistful. It's really sad. I wish that were true, but it really isn't. Kid. Yeah. Is beautiful. I want to dive into some of James's theories because I agree with them, but I also just want to, you know, to take a step back and say, you know, why that beat is there back in 1999. Like, it's fun for us to dive deep and it's fun for us to connect modern canon, but back in 1999, I think that beat served a lot of purposes for the story of the Phantom Menace. I think it shows that the larger universe, even in out of the way place like Tatooine, are aware of Jedi, but their understanding of them is very mythical, as James is saying. I think it also shows us a lot about Anakin. It shows us his early fascination with what would be one of his downfalls, with being all powerful. The idea that there is something in this galaxy that is all powerful and unkillable. And I want to be something that has so much power it can't die. I think it's also there in 99 for the irony that Anakin himself will find out, yes, you can't kill Jedi by doing it, by doing a lot of it. I think that line also has, like, you know, strong relationship to the teaser poster of Anakin with the Vader shadow. So I think there's a lot there from Anakin's perspective back in 1999. And I also think there's a lot there from Qui-Gon's perspective, that, like James is saying, that, you know, his perspective is not so much that the Jedi are, I don't think he's wistful because the Jedi are flawed. I think it's just a reality to him that Jedi aren't all powerful gods. Mm-hmm. And that's in fact why it's a big choice for Anakin to come with, because it's a responsibility from powerful but mortal beings, and there are prices to be paid, like death.
Absolutely. This is exactly where I kind of went to on some of the stuff I wrote down. The idea of it's just very clearly an early lesson with Anakin and letting go. I love how you framed it, of the power. Bring in the novelization, Terry Brooks' novelization. I mean, it begins with Anakin having dreams. I mean, all through the book, Anakin has dreams of using his power for good, for saving, for freedom, for all these things, and having it tied into that. I love what you're saying about the myth of the Jedi at this point, who are alive and well, but, you know, they're in the central system. They're in the big city. This isn't the big city. This is a different view of it. And I wonder how much, I agree with you that it's not super heavy on Qui-Gon's mind, like, they can die, and I've been telling the Jedi Order this for a while. Like, but it definitely would affect his perspective on it and his sort of galaxy view on the Jedi at this point. Of, I don't know, maybe even we're buying into that myth. Yeah, there's some folks I work with that they think that's true too. Is that completely front and center in his mind at that time? No. Rally at Liam Neeson's doing what a great actor does. He's probably got that story in his mind that has nothing to do with canon. He's probably picturing Tim Roth as his Jedi buddy who died, and he's like, you got a story. But he's playing that beat. He's playing the moment so well, right? I'm thinking of Rob Roy during there. But it has.
That's a hell of a thought.
Right. It's a thing. I remember someone handed me that movie to watch on VHS. I was like, history's brutal. But, you know, I mean, so, there's a lot to pull out, but it all does track for what's going on in the story. This is why I like George and his moments. You can pull apart a lot of other things you don't like, including the dialogue and maybe some of the stiffer performances that might have been because of his approach or directing, whatever. You can have those conversations and go in circles all day. I just love pulling apart moments like this and what it means for Anakin at this moment in his life.
Yeah. I mean, I think also back in 1999 thing that, you know, when we go deep, sometimes I also like to remember to stay a little bit on the surface. It's also great foreshadowing that Qui-Gon himself is going to die.
Oh, yeah. If we were doing an Easter egg video, we'd put the red arrow to this means he is. It's foreshadowing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Or we're not really foreshadowing if you've already got the infamous soundtrack that spoiled Qui-Gon's noble end.
Yeah, that was the moment in the theater we all went, oh, it's true. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, we're going deep, but I think for me, it's kind of fun to just sort of unpack. Like I always liked that beat, you know, cause I felt it kind of humanized yeah. Qui-Gon and still waters run deep. And mm-hmm. I think a great sort of moment of, you know, he kind of appreciates this hopeful, childish, optimistic perspective, but it's not true. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like when somebody, you know, tells you like, yeah, I think climate crisis will be gone in 2 years as a, like a 14-year-old. And you're like, I hope so. You know, yeah. It always had that sort of human element of it. But I think the more that I think about it, I think I really resonate with what James is saying is that Qui-Gon is, I think he's not just kind of going through the motions. He's got the nature of the Jedi on his mind. You know, we're getting yeah. some great modern storytelling about, that book's going to come out where Qui-Gon challenges the Jedi Council to mm-hmm. get out of their, you know, almost literally ivory tower, get out mm-hmm. of their beige tower and mm-hmm. go see the rest of the galaxy. So I think he's got his head, you know, really screwed on his shoulders and is thinking about the idea of it's such a responsibility to be a Jedi. You walk away from a lot of things that other people have you, it is entirely a life of service. It's a challenging life right now where he's upset that the Jedi aren't doing things the way they want to. And, you know, it's a heavy burden. It's a heavy responsibility and you might give your life in the line of duty. And I think a lot, I see that contrast from, you know, the way Anakin is fantasizing them about mythical beings too. No, it's a job and it's a really hard one, dude.
Yeah. That ain't it. You, in fair, he's got his mind on the order and the order on his mind. It's all going through there. And I also appreciate what you're saying about, hey, you know, we also want to just play with on the surface of what the scene means and what it's hinting at in the movie and in the context of 1999. But this is also why I have so much fun with the prequels in particular, where I think there's so many things you can pull out of them. And even if they're not 100% there or 100% intended, like I don't envision in my head, again, that George Lucas and Rick McCallum were chewing gum on the set. And they were like, Liam, this is what's going to play. Liam did his job of putting that story in. Not unlike Alec Guinness, you and I always talk about the tip of the iceberg story of the pauses in Alec Guinness talking to Luke Skywalker. Mm-hmm. 9 movies, an entire series. That's just what's fun. But I this is when people ask me and friends with good intentions, like I just don't get what even now you see in the prequels. I can appreciate them more. I understand there's some layers. I love this. I love wondering what Qui-Gon is thinking at this point in time based on the additional storytelling we have and wondering what it means for Anakin. Again, love what you're saying about, yeah, I'd love to be powerful. That sounds good.
Yeah. Fun. Yeah, I mean, I think infusing it with lots of context from the larger storytelling. Mm-hmm. But also, mm-hmm. I think it is just a good, well-played beat, and you don't have to go. I mean, it's the point of little moments like this, of those little human moments that tell us, that are tip of the iceberg, that tell us so much about the way the character mm-hmm. is. And the fact that he sees this thing that even we the audience are going to the theater to see a fantastic, you know, wizard with a laser sword have adventures. And mm-hmm. even Qui-Gon's like, it ain't all that good.
You know what I love about that? Again, yes, I going deep to maybe levels that are only there if you want to engage with it. But that's kind of us as an audience, right? Mm-hmm. It's not unlike Luke going, yeah, I'm going to become a great warrior, and Yoda being like, oh, let me tell you about that.
Yeah.
Of us sitting in the theater in 1999 going, this is a story of the Jedi at their prime and they're heroes. And I would say that they are, and they're indestructible. And we know that's not true, but you want to believe it. And it's almost Qui-Gon going, yeah, no, this ain't that story. This ain't it.
Yeah.
It's much more real than that.
Yep. Yep. It's a responsibility. And I think it ties to when he really tells Anakin, it's like, it's a difficult path. It's your choice. But, you know, you're not just going to, you know, level up real quick and become all-powerful and unkillable. This is a difficult life full of sacrifice. Is that what you really want, you know?
Yeah.
So to take it back to just having the fun of looking at that beat as a part of a tapestry. And, you know, yes, in 1999, George Lucas did not know Claudia Gray was going to write, you know, a novel, including the character Rael Avaros. Get it. But we can look at art in lots of different contexts, and it's fun to look at it as just the text. And now all these other pieces of text exist that could be speaking to it. Do you have headcanon of what you think Qui-Gon is talking about, or what you would like him to be reflecting on when he has that moment of sadness?
Some of the Avaros stuff works for me here. I don't remember all the details of the story, other than Rael Avaros's accent in the audiobook. But I think just a lot of the history. Hey, insert what you want, High Republic, certain the events we're going to learn in the Acolyte, whatever it may be, but a lot of other Jedi along the way that didn't fall or didn't become dark side users or didn't become one of the last 20. You know, maybe he's got some Dooku thoughts as well, but ones that, you know, I don't know, just got killed on a planet trying to solve a problem, trying to do their job. I think that could be part of it as well for me, that is just not true. Any way you slice it, kid, I wish it were.
Yeah. I haven't, you know, reread Master and Apprentice with the Rael Avaros story, but it's Rael kind of goes into that depression and kind of hides out on that long-term job.
Yeah.
Because he lost his apprentice and has this sort of, I failed them. So maybe he is thinking about like, yep, even, you know, Padawans die because Jedi are so not all powerful. We sometimes can't even protect our own Padawan. And then, you know, people go into decades long depressions about it, you know, like, so yeah, no, we're real killable, real killable. Or, I mean, it'd be great if he has been just like, yeah, where did the Jedi go wrong? Well, about 100 years ago during that serial killing Jedi spree. And maybe that's really on his mind.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to take it there, but that's all. Yeah. This is a lot of from Qui-Gon's perspective, but I love what you're saying about, the Jedi and what people viewed them as, you know, and they you know, clearly were known, but even this far out, I saw your laser sword. So the 9-year-old kid, living this, you know, lowly existence in Tatooine has heard the stories, but they're just stories.
Yeah. I think final thought for me too, is I think it is a perspective that, gets expanded upon in lots of other places that I think, you know, Qui-Gon's the kind of guy of like, well, we should die. Not that we should be murdered, but just that death is natural. And that sort of longing to be something that can't be killed or can't die is not for Qui-Gon. It's, you know, you're here for a while and you pass into the cosmic force and that's, you know, that's his thing.
Yeah. And look who first learns how to call back from the other side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with you. As far as final thoughts, I really love it as a lesson for Anakin. It's an insight to what he thinks. It's an insight what he would love to be, even with the best of intentions. But also, again, first kind of lesson of letting go. That ain't true for any of us, kid. But
yeah,
we're not going to learn that now.
More tragedy. If only Qui-Gon had not had a noble end and indeed could have trained Anakin. Well, great question, James. We're going to take a quick break, and then we are going to summon all of our Qui-Gon wisdom to talk about MTV Unplugged. Back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue our discussion, cues of the everything. We had so much fun during the strike when we were not able to talk about Star Wars, talking about all sorts of other things. And one of the main things that popped up a lot is music. And this is what our patron Anthony King is asking about. He says, "Hey, Joseph Gannon, Jennifer, periodically while scrolling on YouTube, I will often find myself watching clips from the MTV Unplugged sessions, most notably Alice in Chains' epic performance in 1996. Mm-hmm. With the music conversations on Other Center, I was curious about your thoughts regarding these performances. Do you like them, love them, hate them? Were they big event viewings upon premiering? It seemed like everyone in the 90s was doing these types of specials, from the legendary performances of Nirvana to even Kiss Unplugged, seeing the original lineup reunite. Mm-hmm. Why do you think they were so popular? Additionally, what modern artist or artist that hasn't released an Unplugged album previously would you like to see undertake an acoustic performance? Thanks, Anthony." So this is I have a relationship with a couple of specific episodes of MTV Unplugged. Had never really stopped to reflect why it was so popular at the time, but I got thoughts. But Ken, you have become an MTV Unplugged Wikipedia entry, right? You
yes.
You're telling me off air that you've looked up the details. You know the facts.
Yeah, this is by a strange coincidence, Anthony. Unless did I slip any of this out anywhere else? Is Anthony pulling from something? Recently, and I'm sorry, you and I were the same era, and that mid-90s explosion of these type of shows, MTV Unplugged, which also kind of led to VH1 Storytellers, and then you have VH1 Legends, and the rock docs that were kind of exploding, and God, I love those things. That Fleetwood Mac rock doc they did on VH1 Behind the Music. The Mamas and the Papas one, I always thought was a movie. It was so crazy, and even more crazy stuff later on, as we learned, unfortunately, about some of them. So I love these things. And you're right, there's those mid-90s ones. But this came up, me and our buddy, we mention him all the time here. We love our buddy Ken Plume over at Force 5 and Open Chat and Bit of a Chat. And he and I one night were playing the Fortnite, and this came up. And we ended up, while we're playing the game, we're both looking up Wikipedia stuff. And this goes back to 1989. I didn't even really realize that. It explodes in 96, but it begins with Squeeze, Sid Straw, one of my favorite artists, and Elliot Easton in October of 1989. And it explodes. 1989, man.
On MTV.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of great bands. There's a great story of Joe Walsh and Dr. John. And Joe Walsh wanted to do some Eagles songs. And Don Henley said, absolutely not. And faxed like a 2-page letter and said, unless I'm there. They didn't want that. So they went literally next door to where Dr. John was appearing on a VH1 morning show and said, can you come play with Joe? Oh, also, by the way, Joe is hammered. And this is one of the incidents that started to get Joe Walsh sober. So fascinating history there, too. But I do think there's some thoughts of why it picks up and explodes in the mid-90s. You?
Yeah. Let's talk about the about why we think it was popular. Then we can maybe get into some of our personal experience, because I'm very curious what your relationship to it was at the time. You know, I think it was a couple of context things. You know, MTV was so known for faster, louder, bigger, wilder. Like, you can Google and find in the 80s and 90s lots of critics complaining about television shows and movies using that fast MTV video editing and the speed at which they cut everything and the volume everything has to be at is this, you know, thing that is going to derail all of culture. And now when we watch older things, like, scene's done, are you gonna cut? Everything is MTV video. So I think there is that just kind of natural evolution. But from my perspective and in my, you know, experience, you know, I was surrounded by people who liked heavy metal, mostly heavy metal or kind of rap, early hip hop. And like all of it was sort of like, how much more intense can you be in whatever you're doing? You know, can the guitar solo be louder or faster? Can the bass hit even harder? All that. Can the attitude be even edgier? Right. So I think there's that big, more, 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 faster. I think also, you know, the I don't remember exactly what year the Milli Vanilli lip sync scandal was, but there's also a lot of talk about that of everything in pop has become fake and plastic. It's all a show. It is one of the reasons that Guns N' Roses were popular, is because a lot of people had a sort of posture of like, we're dangerous, and like, No. They show up late and sometimes jump into the crowd and punch people. And that song about a coma is because he overdosed. It's real. They're real. So I think the combination of a desire to prove authenticity, a desire to prove raw musical talent, combined with the, we don't need fast cuts. We don't need it to be louder. We can sit down with a guitar, muted drums, and it's just us, nothing else. Everything stripped back, and we'll show you the chops we got. I think that's some of where they like, oh, wow, no fast cuts, no stadium, you know, no way they could be faking that, no backing vocals. It's intimate and real. I think that was the pendulum swing that made it so popular by the late 90s.
Yeah, and you're just talking about the Winger and Slaughter one from 1991. That's what you're mentioning here. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Especially the explosion of different music genres taking over in the 90s. I think one of the ones that explodes, or I keep using the word explode. I feel like a VJ today, but it's the Nirvana one, right? And that comes in 93. And it's a timeless one as well. And even someone like me, who didn't grow up a huge Nirvana fan, always would play it on my radio station back then when I worked there, or always listened to it, because it kind of did what you're talking about, where I was like, well, I don't know. I don't like grunge and the hair and the mumbles and I don't know about this. Like, and then it was like, oh crap. No, at the heart of this is not a, they're not a genre. They're a band. And you can see it clearly. I'm a fan of Kiss, for what it's worth, better or worse. I've played Kiss mini golf. I'm part of the problem. But them in 95, it was part of the comeback. Yeah, Bruce Kulick and Eric Carr, Eric Singer, were on the way out. Someone will, I'm sure, correct me. But then Ace and Peter come back, and this is it. But, you know, they're not in the makeup. They're not in the boots. They are a band. And that's still my favorite Kiss album, is Kiss Unplugged. It's fun. And, yeah, so I think you're right. It was not nostalgia, but it was like, let's get back to the simpler times and just peel it all back and show you who these artists are, you know? Mm-hmm. Tony Bennett, we'll show you who Tony Bennett is, which they did in 1995.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think with Nirvana, there's a sort of extra level of authenticity. Like, I'm not a Kurt Cobain expert. I haven't read a million biographies, but I've had multiple conversations with people who, have talked about how he – yeah. One of the things that, you know, tormented him is this idea of authenticity, yeah. Of, you know, do people believe I am who I feel like I am, kind of thing. I think a lot of bands back then would always talk about being based in the blues, but to just have him wail a tormented blues song is really authenticity, right? It's like trying to communicate some true torture in the old soul here.
And it allowed him, and obviously a lot of tragedy just around him and his in his life. I get it. We were there, man. But like, there was a great story of Butch Vig of who produced Nevermind, all the stuff, and drummer of Garbage, of saying, you know, often Cobain would be in the studio just writing beautiful acoustic songs, playing them to the self, and I would try to secretly record them, and he would demand that I destroy them because it, and for whatever reason, it was too intimate. It was too, he shared too much from himself. I don't feel it was that's not my image or the brand. It just was, he was uncomfortable with it. So I think Unplugged allowed a little of that to come out in a way at the height of their powers, so to speak, that you were able to see a lot of that explode. And I think that for a lot of those bands, Alice in Chains, another example, that's why Anthony brought it up, you know. It was powerful for that kind of stuff. The ones that really transcended just the program to become a pop culture, a zeitgeist conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any other thoughts about why it reached the level of popularity when it did?
A lot of it with the time, too. I don't know. I mean, you were – it's not just an age thing. You know, you can measure how old you're getting, not just of when you don't know the new bands, but when you stop watching – a lot of those shows, whether you watch them all the time or not, but like MTV and Total Request Live, Real World, like those, even when I started to get older, those are still part of my existence. Mm-hmm. You were still very aware of it. And I think there was just this wonderful explosion and this, God, why am I using that word today? I'm just feeling like a rock journalist. I'm feeling like Kurt Loder in the 90s. But it just was everywhere. So you wanted to soak it all in. Maybe I'm speaking through the lens of someone who was, in radio, rock radio at the time, it just seemed everywhere. 96 was a big year for music, and when the last final years of rock as we knew it, some will say, there, 94, the explosion of grunge, all this stuff. God damn, it just was so fun to just be part of it and see it happening, not part of it like I was playing in these bands, but just like being around for that stuff, that you just wanted to soak it all up. And the VH1 Storyteller series is amazing too. One of the early ones I fell in love with was Elvis Costello just explaining stories behind Allison and all that kind of stuff. God, it was just great.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe has some of it does have to do with that shifting time. I mean, I am a big Nirvana fan. I was then. I haven't read a million biographies, but I had all their albums. Dave Grohl was my favorite drummer when I was playing the drums, and I listened to those albums again and again to try to learn his drum parts. Played Smells Like Teen Spirit in our high school lunchroom and started a food fight, which is just, one of the coolest things that ever happened to me.
That's a music video. That's a music video.
It is. Right, yeah. When the chocolate milk exploded on my ride, Tom. So cool. But I think that we have talked a lot, especially during Other Center, about the 80s being a grim time with the concern of nuclear war and AIDS and satanic panic and all these things. I remember everybody, like not everybody, I remember some people feeling and talking about that shift from, heavy metal that was sort of like edgy, except for, edgy, and I'm going to party all night. I'm going to do whatever I want, except for here's the one song that's a ballad about a different girl's name every time. This one, my ballad's about Christina. Yours is about Becky. Cool. I don't know. It's all hard all the time. One ballad about loving a girl, and then all hard all the time, right? And then
now I'm the one that wants to be with you. Let's do it. Let's sing it.
Only on this track, not on the other 11 tracks.
Not on the other ones.
Yeah. But Nirvana had this energy, and a lot of grunge had an energy of the changing times of,
yeah,
the nightmare of the 80s is ending. And unlike many of us were led to believe, we actually are going to have a future. The Cold War is over. There are possibilities. And to have like a group like Nirvana that was sort of just as hard rocking, but didn't have as much of that chip on their shoulder and look like they were looking toward the future, and didn't have as, frankly, sometimes misogynistic lyrics,
Right.
I think that was a big shift in the time too. And maybe that kind of went with like, you know what? The 80s are over. And what are the 90s going to be about? Unplugged.
Unplugged.
Yeah. Yeah. So which episodes of MTV Unplugged were appointment viewing? Which ones did you catch? Which ones meant a lot to you?
I didn't watch Nirvana yet. I was still in high school, and I caught up with that one later. We used to always play those tracks on our radio station too. Kiss, I was front and center for watching the moment it showed up. There's a classic one with Oasis where Liam got drunk and sick and couldn't perform, and Noel sang, but then Liam was in the balcony yelling at him. It's a stunning study of the band at the time. Love that one there. You mentioned the Tony Bennett one. That's fascinating too. In this alt rock grunge era, that was kind of where I first, heard of that. I knew the name, maybe had seen it. I don't know, passed him in a record store, but here he's doing Unplugged. That was fascinating for me. To have him learn a lot about him there. But yeah, there's a who's who of every band for that time, but those are the big ones. I liked the Chris Isaak one a lot too.
I didn't even know that. And I loved Chris Isaak because he had done his Wicked Game song David Lynch's Wild at Heart.
Absolutely.
And that song is, intense.
The Eagles did their Hell Freezes Over one kind of in conjunction with it. That one there too. It's a lot of that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
But it's I'm getting lost in the list because then you just like, you're like, what? When? That happened?
Did you watch MTV at home or because that was allowed? That was not a.
Well, it wasn't allowed growing up and, up into the, 90s. Yeah, so I was in high school. I think my mom knew they were losing some control for me, but I would still sneak home to, hope that Prince's Cream video was on and I could watch it before they got home. But no, by the time I was working at radio and everything, it was always on. I mean, I always thought I wanted to try out for Real World and didn't. And I love the early incarnations of Total Request Live. I thought Carson Daly was good. I the whole cast of the time, I thought Dave Holmes was a great addition to stuff. I love Kurt Loder's a great influence on just stuff I would do later on in radio and even in Schmoes and stuff with the news. Yeah, it was always a part of my day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would come home and it was great when nobody else was home because I would just sit there and watch MTV for hours. So for me, the big ones were Nirvana. Like I said, the band was big to me then. I was really curious to see like Dave Grohl like to hit them drums hard. So I found out about the existence of those bundle sticks, which, don't produce as much volume. And it was so cool to hear them do other songs that weren't just theirs, and really try to use that platform to introduce people to the music that had influenced them. The Meat Puppets' Lake of Fire is one of my from MTV Unplugged is one of my their cover of it is one of my favorite songs.
Meat Puppets are great.
And I it was I know a lady came from Duluth, in 93, I was still like, someone mentioned something from the state of Minnesota. Amazing. I've used Lake of Fire as the like closing kicker for a couple of the different stage plays I've written. So that I sat down and watched that one. That one is close to my heart. I've listened to it a million times. And then the other big one for me was Tony Bennett. That was appointment viewing. Cause I had just got into Sinatra in like 93, 94. There was the kind of rumblings of the weird swing renaissance that happened in the mid to late 90s. Culminating really, I think, in the movie Swingers. Swingers might have fueled it and also ended it at the same time.
I think so.
I think it maybe did both. For anybody who doesn't know, Tony Bennett, you know, a little younger than, you know, Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. Sinatra had said many, many times that Tony Bennett was his favorite other saloon singer, you know. And Tony Bennett is just a fascinating, fascinating guy who sings the standards, has like one main album where he got talked into like, do modern music, and it's a real groovy cover where he's got like orange artsy bell bottom illustration, and he's singing all the kids songs, and he's just like, oh, this ain't nothing wrong with the music, but it ain't me. Authenticity. And then his son engineered this comeback of like, you know, we're in this different time where people want alternative. People are suddenly not, here's my music, period. They're interested in the new and the different. And if they're interested in, you know, what is Nirvana doing different? What is, you know, Stone Temple Pilots doing different? Let's re-examine Talking Heads for people who didn't pay attention to them. And why not you, Tony? You're alt too. I think his MTV Unplugged wasn't like just this sort of like, it was a comeback and it was a, you know, backdoor pilot for swing jazz and Tin Pan Alley, but it was also a part of the sort of this new dawn of like, let's try lots of different things.
Yeah. You're making me think of something too. It's fascinating. He was the winner of that, of everything you're talking about, because rest in peace, Tony. I think it kept going for so long, but there was around that time. You're so right. There was this push. I remember like Pat Boone released covers of Metallica songs, right? Like Engelbert Humperdinck was on the Beavis and Butthead soundtrack. It was just like, hey, the crooners, right? And it was quickly became a thing that didn't necessarily work. And not that all these people, you know, I got nothing against Pat Boone, but talented, but he wasn't Tony Bennett. It's like you didn't get what Tony was doing.
Tony, it was his authenticity. He found an audience who wanted the music that spoke to him, the music that he was, you know, born to make from his perspective. And he did it until he died. The man loved to perform. I got to see him at Hollywood Bowl, and I believe he was celebrating like the 50th year since he first performed there. And he was like, and I'm going to be back for another 50. That man loved to perform.
I hadn't thought of it. Released in 1997, in a metal mood, no more Mr. Nice Guy. Pat Boone covering heavy metal songs. It's amazing.
It's a little bit the opposite of what Tony Bennett was doing. Because Tony Bennett was kind of like, I ain't doing that. His albums that were out when he did MTV Unplugged were a tribute to Fred Astaire and a tribute to Frank Sinatra. And if you're at all curious, those albums are also in the realm of MTV Unplugged. They're not big orchestra with brass. They're like piano, bass, you know, jazz, drums, phenomenal. If you want to check them out, Stepping Out and Perfectly Frank, they're two of the greatest Tony Bennett albums, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do want you to check out Pat Boone's cover of Paradise City on this album after the show today and report back.
I'll be cranking it up loud, Hey. Yeah.
Anyways, fascinating memory laying there. Walk. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like so much we talk about, everything is dependent on one's perspective of age. So we're talking about the experiences we had. I wasn't always a huge Alice in Chains fan. I do this weird thing sometimes where I get one album. I'm a big fan of the album Dirt, so I got to check out that Alice in Chains one too. Do you have any hopes or dreams or desires for somebody you'd like to see do an MTV Unplugged?
Yeah, I'm scrolling along because it went for a while, more than you'd think, right? It went into 2023, they technically did one. Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga did do one in 2021.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure I'm not just someone will say they already did it. But like, look, I'm just Garbage is a band I'd love to see do it because I'd want a chance to break it all down to how they wrote the songs, what they meant. Shirley Manson's got such great stories to tell. She's entertaining anyways. That'd be a classic bigger band, particularly from that era as they emerged on the scene in 94. Like, to look back on their career. I just had the chance to see them not too long ago, 30 years after I first wanted to see them. And just they're still powerful, and the songs mean a lot. And and I would love to see that in terms of classic bands. But there's a lot of bands that, you know, Haim, I'd love to see so that people can get to the core of their music and fall in love with them as much as I have, and just in the power of their music and their messages and stuff like that would work for me as well. But I'm literally scrolling through my iPhone. God, there's my age. Yeah, there's a lot of newer bands, but, you know, I'd love to see someone like Garbage.
I got to look up that Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga one. Mm-hmm. I'm not super caught up with modern music. I don't know who has done one. I would love to see Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga, has a part of her concerts that are basically like she goes to the piano, and it is kind of Lady Gaga unplugged in the middle of her big monster stadium tours. I got Taylor Swift's Midnight's album. It's got a great unplugged mood to it. But I'm going to be boring and predictable and say, man, it would be great to see Guns N' Roses do it. Just talk about the contrast from the big and the loud.
The
acoustic version of You're Crazy on GNR Lies is one of my favorite songs of theirs. Been lucky to see them in concert many times. Parts of Axl's vocal range sounded great, and some of it sounded like that man had been been on tour for quite some time. So a little rest up, and then I think they could still surprise people.
I absolutely think so, especially after seeing Slash at the Oscars. They're ready to go. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be great, John Williams, just on like a little Casio keyboard or something, just whistling. Just John Williams whistles.
That would be absolutely amazing. It's sitting right here because I was doing some music thing. So we're going to wrap up with a really dumb demonstration if you're up for it, Ken. My wife knows I've been having fun playing with our keyboard to make music for horror films. So she got me this thing called a stylophone, which I had never known about. Do you know about stylophones, Ken?
I do. Sean Arnold from the band The Moonagers uses one on some of our stuff in his studio.
Really? It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to that.
It's wonderful.
There's my unplugged concert, right?
Scrimshaw unplugged.
Scrimshaw with stylophone. Yeah. Why is no one here for my stylophone concert?
Yeah, it's mesmerizing.
Yeah,
love that.
All right. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
No, fun questions from the deep of Qui-Gon and Anakin and the future of the Jedi and them to Tony Bennett, Pat Boone, and MTV Unplugged. I love doing it.
That's right. That's who I want to see do an unplugged Anakin. Yes. Work through your issues with music, Anakin. Come on.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
All right. You want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. You know, Cy Snittles and the Max Rubin Band. They could have done a great unplugged at one point, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing it down. Yes. We're Forest Center Pod. Thanks for listening or watching. You can find us on Twitter and Threads and Instagram at Forest Center Pod. We're on Facebook at Forest Center Podcast. And don't forget, you can get merch, tpublic.com/user/ Force Center, get the Speculate Responsibly t-shirt. It's still there because a lot of people using that phrase, and I'm happy about that. But the shirt, the original shirt, is still there. Also, patreon.com/Force Center is where you can support us. My website is kennapsok.com. I'm on a little bit of a hiatus right now, but if you want to listen to some music and all the things I love, I have my radio show, Pop Rock and Radio. All the episodes are there. You can link from my website. And upcoming comedy show dates are there as well. You, sir, where can they find your music? And and I do have somebody. After you told me about it, John Munson's wife had has been in a regular rotation.
Spotify. So great. Yeah. Oh, that. Well, yeah. Well, thanks for the pitch. Yeah, I tell people about my comedy albums on Bandcamp. Ken has comedy albums on Bandcamp as well, so you can just go to bandcamp.com and search either of our names. But one of the albums I did a comedy show called Flawfest, and then I asked a bunch of musician friends to write songs inspired by the comedy as just kind of an experiment, because I love the way comedy and music relate. And one of the bits in the comedy show is about the fact that I'm tone deaf and can't sing, even though I would love to sing. John Munson wrote this fabulous song called Wifehead, and just like all the songs are good, but it's just like you wrote like the perfect 1993 I'm frozen and that's what rock should sound like to me song. John Munson, it's great. Absolutely great. So check that out. Check out Flawfest on bandcamp.com. If you want to find me on social media, my handle is my name everywhere: Blue Sky, Threads, Mastodon, Instagram. Come find me and let me know your favorite episode of MTV Unplugged. Ken as well. For now, we have Aid the Cube.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.